You're listening to the Ask Drone You podcast. You ask, we answer your drone questions. Whether you're here to turn your passion into profit or you simply fly for fun, we're a community of learners and teachers who aspire to achieve greatness. We are
Drone You.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another fantastic episode of Ask Drone You. My name is Paul, and I have the pleasure of sitting here with Mr. Brendan Schulman. Brendan, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Now, there's a lot of new things in the drone world right now. It seems that the industry is evolving at a pace that we haven't seen really before, almost unprecedented. And this new reauthorization really changes the landscape. And it's, you know, it's really actually something that I think brings a lot of value to drone operators who are Part 107, they're licensed. But for those people who are not really familiar, how the reauthorization changes the scope or maybe changes the way that DJI is working within the legal realm, help us understand that. I mean, how is this really changing and evolving the industry as a whole?
So I think it's important to understand the reauthorization, what it is and sort of why it exists. So Congress every few years does a bill called the reauthorization bill for not just the FAA, but for other agencies. It's intended to provide funding to the agency and also to instruct the agency as to what it's supposed to do over the next few years. So that means it's an opportunity to put in provisions that might be helpful to an industry, but also could be a challenge, particularly in an environment like we have today where drones raise safety, security, and privacy concerns. Could be a challenge in terms of proposals that might be put into a federal bill that could restrict or limit or create other requirements for the use of a drone. So really, it's great that we have what's now a five-year reauthorization because we know what the FAA will be working on in terms of the future regulatory landscape for drones. It also makes clear all kinds of things from counter UAS authority to model aircraft operations and all the way down the line. So it creates a stability for the next few years and also kind of an indication of what the FAA is likely to do.
Those indications are actually really interesting as well because in this reauthorization, you hit a lot of points, but in this reauthorization, they're talking about a systematic way of approaching things like flight over people operations. And the geofencing, the things that you're changing right now, well, not you, but DJI is changing right now, are going to have a huge role in that. I mean, so do you think that as we have the next 5 years, which correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't that a longer period of time for reauthorization than traditional means?
It's a little bit longer. You know, typically, reauthorization could be 3 or 4 years, so it's a little longer.
So do you think that we'll see in the next few years those changes in the systems that the FAA is developing? I mean, like, for example, you know, we have remote ID, right? And remote ID is so important to have that license plate. We know who's flying in the sky. Do you think that that is going to allow, or the framework is going to allow for more operations?
So remote ID was actually in the short-term extension. But this bill took 3 years to get done. And along the way, FAA had to be extended for about a year or so at a time to let Congress figure out all the stuff that was going on, particularly non-drone related stuff like ATC privatization. Anyway, not relevant, but explains the timeline here. So along the way, we got inklings of what was going to be important for Congress. And one of those things was remote ID put into the short-term extension a couple of years ago. So we already had the FAA tasked with figuring that out. That's going to crystallize over the next year or two, I would think, in terms of FAA proposed rule and standards for actually implementing that. And I do agree with you, it is important for the security agencies in particular to have an ability to identify who's flying and do they belong where they are, especially if it's near a sensitive facility. And it's been clear over the past couple of years that without that assurance, without the remote ID functionality, the security agencies are not comfortable with FAA creating more rules for operation beyond Part 107. So for example, flight over people, BVLOS, night operations, things that we know will enhance the value of drone operation for everyone out there, will be held up until we figure out remote ID.
So what they're saying is we have to have remote ID to essentially feed the other systems, and then we'll be okay with doing all these other operations.
It provides the security element and the ability to distinguish friend from foe that the national security agencies are really concerned about. I also think it has a separate side benefit of allowing existing state law to be applied. So when we think about what's happening at the state level, not FAA, but state level, there's a drive to create drone restrictions and flight limits and things like that. Typically because of concerns about privacy or property intrusions or nuisance. If we can provide a remote ID accountability mechanism, then we don't need new restrictions on the use of drones. We just need a mechanism to apply existing law. So that's a better solution than the sort of flood of state and local restrictions that would otherwise be...
Segregate the airspace and then have a pay-to-play system, and that would just be all awful.
That's one potential outcome.
Now, you make a really important point here, accountability. There's a way with remote ID to hold pilots accountable. Do you believe that this accountability could also affect the way that most hobbyists operate in their traditional day-to-day operations?
So one of the changes in this Reauthorization Act is to change the framework for model aircraft operations, the hobbyists or consumer drone operators. And this is sort of part of a debate, an extended conversation between the government and industry and other stakeholders as to how to bring remote ID and other requirements to the recreational side of the drone industry. And we've been supportive all along. If you look back at our March 2017 white paper, for the reasons I said, the accountability, the security, those are important needs. So remote ID makes sense. What's really important is to do it in a way that doesn't cost money to the end users, is reasonable in terms of burdens and, you know, what extra steps do you have to do just to fly, and also protects your privacy as a commercial drone operator. I think if we have a mandatory national database of drone flight information, that could be intrusive to competitors in a marketplace who are scouting out energy sites or something like that. So we want to make sure that remote ID exists, but that the outcome here is low cost and reasonable to the end users. And that's what we've been advocating for.
And are you advocating for that because essentially you're saying we want to make this easy and convenient as possible so we can scale drone operations and have more enterprise users? Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah, well, we care about our customers and we're on your side. So if there's a cost or a burden or an intrusion into your operational information, that's going to hurt us because that makes it harder for you to operate your drone, mm-hmm. less likely to use it, less likely to buy the latest and greatest model. So we have a very close mutual interest in making sure that when remote ID comes, it's in a form that is easy and inexpensive for you. And we've actually already led that with a solution called Aeroscope, which uses the existing onboard technology. So there's no equipment change, there's no cost, no fee, no subscription. You don't need to sign into a database. It works right off the drone using existing radios. And it only sends that signal within the area of your operation. So you're not sort of connecting to a government database and putting your information, your flight information into that. Instead, you're just like a license plate, but an electronic license plate. You're telling the surrounding world around you, hey, I'm here, here's what I'm doing. Here's the type of drone, altitude, and the location of the pilot, so that if someone needs to have a conversation with you when you're operating, they can walk up to you and say, hey, maybe this is not a great time to fly, or, you know, can I know a little bit more about what you're doing?
If someone came up to me and said, maybe this isn't the best time to fly, I would say that it would be the nicest enforcement officer I've ever run into in my whole life.
But it's happened to me.
Well, one thing that I think is really interesting about this license plate is that with license plates, there's almost a layer of privacy. There's a layer of, like, if, for example, I've got this guy, Adam L., and he's driving on the highway next to me, and he cuts me off, and I'm like, that guy's going to get it. And I look up his license plate, figure out where he lives, and then draw nasty things on his lawn. You know, like, that would be bad. And that can't happen because we have a layer of privacy. So with remote ID, is there a layer of privacy as well?
That's certainly our goal in advocating for the outcome here is to stop at that license plate point where, yes, you have an accountability number, mm-hmm. but you can't figure out where the person lives and show up at their door. And I think we've advocated for that in the Remote ID Aviation Rulemaking Committee last year, that the private information of who's flying, which company, which person, needs to be secure and safe from disclosure so we don't have that kind of scenario. So I hope and we will advocate for an outcome that it resembles a license plate. Sure, there's a readily identifiable number associated with your drone, but that doesn't lead everyone to your name and address and phone number and, you know, other information.
Which is good to have that layer of privacy for obvious reasons. Okay, so I think in order for people to understand this in layman's terms, remote ID is accountability to pilots, but that same accountability is like the golden key for government to say, all right, we will unlock the rest of these drone operations for enterprise uses, right? I mean, that's a fair way to go about that, or a fair summary, maybe?
It is. Again, what may not be widely appreciated in the drone community yet, although if you come to AirWorks and other conferences, you'll hear this from the national security agencies, is that there's such concern about drones rarely, but sometimes operating in the wrong location. They really need an identification mechanism. And until that happens, they're sort of holding the FAA back from adding more operational rules that will expand the operations at night over people, and one day beyond visual line of sight. We can't do more with drones until we solve this ID security and accountability issue.
It's a very important issue. So going along the line with these security agencies, now security agencies, along with the reauthorization, also have more capacity to handle nefarious or maybe erroneous drone operations, right, the benefit of the doubt here. So with that, now if I understand the reauthorization, DOD and DHS, and my question here is if any law enforcement officer working with them could do the same thing, but DOD and DHS can now mitigate or remove nefarious drones from the sky with the reauthorization, is that correct?
Well, there's been discussion over how to address real security threats involving drones. And those are real. We don't shy away from those. We support solutions for the rare moments when there is a real threat. The question is how to do that and who gets that authority. Under existing law, it's illegal to shoot down an aircraft, and drones are aircraft, as you well know. So we need a solution that makes sense and that's balanced and also protects the people on the ground from drones falling down everywhere. So what this bill did is sort of took a step towards that outcome by granting authority to DHS and DOJ. DOD was dealt with last year in a different bill, but essentially that's now three agencies that have the authority to intercept, jam, shoot down, mitigate drones that are actually threatening a protected site or protected person. I think that's important. What's important also is to balance that with First Amendment rights, Fourth Amendment, civil liberties, all the things that you would expect to have in terms of your right to fly. And we see that in this bill, so it's good. It also requires coordination with the FAA, which is important. We want to make sure that anyone doing that understands who's actually authorized, make sure that the approved operations are not negatively impacted. So we see balance in this bill, which is good. Where we go from there, I think you asked about, you know, what about local? At some point, we'll have to figure out solutions like that for state and local authorities, typically those who are first on the scene responding to whatever's happening. And I think that's a complicated topic, but certainly one that we're supportive of figuring out.
You know, when you say that, I'm starting to think of like bank robberies, right? Because a bank robbery is a federal crime, but yet local police kind of, they go there. So that's why I wanted to ask that question. But, you know, Brendan, I think that a lot of drone pilots need to understand that remote ID, the reauthorization, everything that's coming essentially down the line adds value to commercial pilots who are doing everything properly. I mean, would you agree if we're able to do more operations with, you know, remote ID and a means of following it, would you agree that this adds value to people who are doing it the right way?
It does. And the way it was explained to me by someone at one of these security agencies was, you know, we can identify you, and then once we know who you are, we're happy to have you fly. We like drones. If we don't know who you are, we have no means of figuring out who's associated with these drones. We just have to create a restriction. No one can fly. So I think it is in our interest to figure out how to do remote ID, do it quickly, which we've tried to accelerate by actually implementing it in the way that we can. And we've got great stories coming out of the Albuquerque Balloon Festival and with airport partners around the world using Aeroscope to help identify drones, go and talk to people on the ground. Also just learn, like, you know, once we have authority either to identify or in some cases mitigate drone threats, how do we use that? Do we need a staff of law enforcement officers to run out and talk to the people with the drones and shoot them down? Or are there other techniques? And I think we're just beginning to understand that. So if we waited 2 years for FAA to figure it out, we wouldn't have that educational process, both on the community side and on the aviation safety and law enforcement side, of how do we use remote technology. So it's sort of a helpful experiment to see, you know, what happened in Albuquerque was really interesting. You know, TFR, you know, do we need to educate the people? There are 40 drones flying there, right? So do we need more education? Do we need to enhance our geofencing system some more? Do we need just a crew on the ground to go and talk to people? These are all things that we need to know so that when remote ID is official and required, we have a system that works well.
You know, one of the nuances you bring up about the Albuquerque balloon fiesta is I fly DJI. My office is inside the TFR. Okay. And I know.
Great view.
Yeah, it is a good view. And I
Tell
know.
Us.
Hey, I've got an extra house you could stay at if you want to go. Okay.
You're laughing. But.
No, I know a lot of people love balloon fiesta. I live there. So yep. Every morning I drive to work and there's 100 balloons. So, but one nuance that you bring up that is a good piece of information to kind of capture what you're trying to communicate is when I fly DJI inside of, well, I don't fly inside of the TFR, but when I tried to start up my drone at Balloon Fiesta, because I was like, wait a minute, anytime there's a TFR, a red circle pops up and I cannot take off at all. There's no like, oh, here's how you go through and avoid it. That's not there. So for those 40 people who did fly, was it an airspace incursion where they took off and then entered the airspace? Because I'm wondering, like, these nuances, again, are a really good piece of information. I don't want to go down that path. I've only got you for, like, 3 more minutes. And I want to know, with reauthorization, how does drone flying change for hobbyists?
Well, that's one of the major changes. So 6 years ago, what's called Section 336, provided that the FAA could not regulate model aircraft as defined and pursuant to some conditions of operation. That led to sort of recent debate, particularly on remote ID, as to whether those aircraft operated by many people, at least a million have registered, would be subject to remote ID and other necessary regulations over time. And look, our position has always been from the beginning, and mine personally, we go back a while, is we need reasonable regulations. There are some concerns to address. There are some things that are not legitimate concerns. We want to open up and foster an environment where people are using drones for enterprise activities, for fun, for family photos. All these things are great. We have to do them safely and securely. So we're not anti-regulation if the regulation is informed and appropriate. So opening up the model aircraft to regulation works if it's done in a reasonable way. And the big problem could have been that in the absence of 336 model aircraft rule, all you have, the only operational authority is part 107. So everyone needs to go and take the test at the airport, study for it for 2 days, show up in person. That's an incredible barrier to entry to people who just want to try the technology and eventually will become commercial pilots and entrepreneurs. So there's an interest we all have in maintaining an easy path to using a drone for the first time. And I'm glad to say that the bill does that because the testing that will be required, a knowledge test, which, by the way, is something we've already done in our product.
It's in the app, right?
We've done our own version of a knowledge test because we support education and think it's important for people to know the rules. Makes sense. There will now be so this bill says there will be an official FAA-designed knowledge test. They will design it in collaboration with industry stakeholders, including manufacturers. So we will work with them to keep it reasonable and focused on what it's important to know. And then it can be administered electronically. So you don't have to go to the test center to do it. You can do it on a website or maybe in the app. So that'll facilitate knowledge and education and safe operations without really getting in the way of having a good time and getting to know the technology. That's a good outcome. Remote ID is in there too, obviously. Again, you can't have a remote ID solution that's so important to security agencies if you leave out 80% of the operators. So that's important too. And there's some other provisions. There's greater definition of what a community-based organization is.
Which they've never really defined. They've kind of come out and right. said, well, it's like the AMA, but they've never said AMA, you yep. know? So
that's right. And also one big change will be from notification of all airports to permission or authorization in controlled airspace. If you think about it, that's two changes, right? That means that all the Class G airports no longer require notification. So that's easier or simpler. But in controlled airspace, authorization. Thankfully, we have Lance, and DJI recently became an authorized Lance provider. So I have to believe, I think it's true, that in controlled airspace, that authorization will be the Lance system. So it's instant or virtually instant and accessible through technology. So you'll have a great path to operation still in urban and controlled airspace where it's safe and a reasonable test to take to learn what you need to know. And I think that's a good result. Now, none of that's been implemented yet.
So FAA, I was just going to say, yeah, we're not in the interpretation yet.
No, we're not. So FAA has said nothing has changed. So the sort of the old framework applies, all the guidance and path to operation. They're going to work on things like the test and the control, you know, changing Lance to support more users, I would think. So look for that probably over the next year or so, and we'll look forward to working with them and making sure that, again, these pathways to innovation are protected.
Which is important. It's extremely important. So just to quickly summarize, things don't change just yet, but for hobbyists, we're going to see an implementation of education, lack of notification at Class G airports, but a requirement of approval or permission to fly in controlled airspace. And I want to really make sure you guys understand that controlled airspace, not restricted airspace. A lot of people online say restricted. It's not restricted. It's controlled. Anyway, just want to get that out there. But Brendan, this is really good because now we're saying, look, you can still fly drones for hobby reasons and discover the unreal experience that it is and understand that flow state, but you're going to be educated. And now we have a way to hold you accountable. And to me, that says, look, you can still go out there and fly, but now we're going to hold you accountable to the rules. And I think that adds so much value for not only Part 107 pilots, but for, I mean, the country as a whole. So I think it's really good. Hey, Brendan, thank you so much for being on the show. Greatly appreciate your time. And we'll hopefully have you on again sometime. But guys, that's going to go ahead and do it for us today. Hopefully that gave you as much information as possible about reauthorization. We're going to have a lot of shows on it coming up, so stay tuned. But that is going to do it. My name is Paul, and you're watching another episode of Ask Drone U.
We believe that videos, images, words, and sounds have the absolute power to inform, inspire, and entertain. We reject indecision, confusion, and vanity, for they work against the community. We are united under the virtues of safety and knowledge. We are a training community of learners and teachers who encourage and energize each other to achieve greatness. We are pilots, videographers, photographers, freelancers, business owners, enthusiasts, experts, and apprentices. We are creators. We are the Drone U.